Welcome into episode 187 of the Sources Say podcast, your go-to Kentucky basketball and recruiting podcast on the growing KSR podcast network. The Sources Say podcast is, as always, presented by our good friends at Justice Dental. You can make an appointment at one of two Lexington locations. That's on Wellington Way and Blazer Parkway. Now is a great time to schedule your dental cleaning. Remember that regular dental appointments are important for your overall health. You can learn more and make an appointment at justicedental.com. Dr. Justice and Dr. Thompson, look forward to seeing you soon. I'm your host, Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. Very happy to be joined once again. A special guest today. He's been on the show, a friend of the show, but we're doing things a little bit differently today. We are joined by none other than KSR's Zach Gagan, recruiting expert. He has been boots on the ground at various events this spring, and we wanted to come together for a recruiting specific episode where we broke down, did some scouting reports, talked about these kids' games that we've been seeing on the trail. We're going to start with Zach, who was with me in Indianapolis watching the Nike EYBL session 2. Zach Gagan, how you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, Jack. Thank you for that lengthy intro. I feel like last time I was on, you didn't have the nice sponsor at the very top of the show. Well, so it sounds like you're progressing.
The bills must be paid somehow, and and Justice Dental is the way to make that happen. And Justice Dental is phenomenal in every form and facet of the planet Earth. So
you get free cleanings.
I cannot disclose the deals of the details of my deal with Justice Dental, but I will say that my teeth are looking mighty fresh. Anyway,
well. There you go.
We're gonna start the show talking about the Nike EYBL, all of the Kentucky targets. Because there are so many, Zach, I want to make sure that we make it clear that we're only going to talk about the 2023 kids today. We'll talk about the 24s at a future date. But just because there's so many we have to get through, Zach, I just don't think it's fair to – it wouldn't do the show justice if we just kind of skimmed through every kid and got through all the 24s as well. So I want to be able to just kind of focus on the 23s today. Talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, kids that need improvement, who the Kentucky coaches were going after, who they were focusing on more so than others. I think all that stuff is very intriguing and things that that the fans would like to know. So obviously the big story of the EYBL season is none other than DJ Wagner. It is a constant circus with his recruitment. All eyes are on him. Is he going to Kentucky? Is he going to Louisville? He's a guy that I have been on this show. I've been a little critical of his game. I thought he was closer to number 10 in the rankings than he was closer to number 1 this past year. We got to see him together at the Hoop Hall Classic, where he did not put forth a very impressive performance. Very inefficient, kind of clunky jump shot. Very, a lot of hitches. Just a very inconsistent in terms of a pure shooter. Got to his spots well, but didn't make the shots when they counted. Wasn't able to finish through contact. Very shifty and does a great job in a bunch of different areas. I like how crafty he is around the basket. But there were a lot of concerns about his game long term. I will say that he has completely flipped that narrative going into the EYBL season to start this. Through two sessions, he is leading the event, averaging 21.3 points per contest, also top 10 in assists at 5.1 per game, and steals at 2.0 per game. That's third overall in the EYBL circuit. So what do you like about DJ Wagner? What has impressed you so far about DJ to open up this spring?
Well, to piggyback kind of off what you were saying, I kind of agree with, his Hoop Hall showing was not particularly, number one worthy or what we were expecting necessarily. But then obviously the EYBL has kind of, that whole narrative has changed. And I don't know, he's pretty much kind of playing with the same team too, with Bradshaw and Mackenzie and Baco still on his same EYBL team as well. So it was just interesting to see him kind of come out and maybe play a facilitator a little bit more up in Indy when we got to see him. I've said this before to you and don't twist my words, but the way he, like you were talking, his shiftiness gives me some Ja Morant type vibes when the guy's getting in the lane. Like he just knows, he finds a way to scoot around his defender and just get up layups that probably, most guys shouldn't. But he also at the same time kind of has the same issues where Ja does of the physicality and, being able to just get bumped off when they're kind of going up for those shots. But the kid is, you know, he's a really kind of an underrated defender. It seems like he's actually really solid on that end, especially in passing lanes. The kid can sneak by and snatch anything out of the air, it seems. But in transition, he's good too. Like I said, he was really facilitating the ball. His scoring, he can pretty much score from anywhere on the floor. It was just a matter of kind of those shots falling as of from, you know, from Indy compared to Hoop Hall. So I guess, what was that, 4 months?
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that. So really the difference, you know, he was kind of the same player. He was just hitting shots. And then he kind of got in this mindset of, well, I'm just going to let everyone else get theirs first. Then I'm going to go in on me and get mine. So he looked really good. He looked like the number one player in the country when we saw him.
I think there's some pretty significant and clear growth in confidence. I think the pressure that has kind of been on him for a long time, just with this recruitment and being number one for so long, I think it did kind of weigh on him heavily. And I think there was a chip on his shoulder going into the spring, like, okay, the doubters are starting to creep in. People are wanting to knock me off my top spot. He was knocked off his top spot. He got moved down in most of the national rankings across the board. So I think there was kind of a chippiness to him, and you know, behind the scenes there was a little bit of chippiness physically as well, and we don't need to get into the details of that, but he showed some fight. He showed that he is, you know, wanting to back up number one status at that game. And I just love his kindness. I love that he was able to show off his abilities as a facilitator. I think he was phenomenal and I think he's filling out quite a bit too. You know, he's still listed at 165. He's been listed at 160, 165 for the past year, but you can't tell me the kid that we saw at Hoop Hall that was struggling to finish through any and all contact is the same kid that we saw, you know, kind of filling out in the biceps and shoulders kind of widening a little bit. You can see he's getting something to him on that area. And I think that was one of his biggest weaknesses going into it. So great to see that he's growing in that area as well. He's, you know, still struggles to finish through strong contact and length. And I do, you know, have some concerns about how that would translate to the SEC level. But that in terms of being a shot maker, his mechanics have vastly improved. Watch the in-depth film of these first two sessions, and it's night and day from what we saw his junior year at Camden. You go down the list. You pointed out his defense. I really like what he showed there, especially in Indianapolis this past weekend. So a lot of good there, and I think he kind of proved his doubters wrong that he is at the top of the list. And I do think that I think the argument is at least over for at least a little while. I do think that he is going to be number one in these updated rankings for sure. So shout out to DJ, and well done to shut up the haters there for a little while.
Well, and I also think you're probably a little right about, you know, he probably did coast a little bit, you know, maybe going into the Hoop Hall event, you know, because he's been number one for how long now? At least 2 years. So maybe there was a little bit of, you know, just like, well, I'm the best player in the country. You know, everyone's known it. They've known it for a long time. Then, you know, he didn't have his best showing at Hoop Hall. And maybe that kind of woke him up a little bit and said, all right, well, let's kind of get things together here and really show everyone that I am the number one player in the country. So I think there's some truth to that part there.
Yeah, it's, you know, I appreciate the way he's kind of handling the pressure on that end and just kind of letting his play do the talking on the basketball court. So in that end, I think he's firmly back at the top of that list. Let's keep going down the list. We're going to go through the official rankings, not necessarily the way we see the players ranked, but we're just going to go down the consensus rankings and kind of go player by player on that front. KJ Evans is a very polarizing prospect at 6'10", 190 pounds, playing for Team Durant. One of Kentucky's biggest front court targets, wing, whatever position you want to call him. That's kind of one of the issues with him right now. Don't really know what he is. It's Kentucky, it's Oregon. There are a couple other schools that are trying to sneak in there, but it really feels like it's Oregon's to lose, with Kentucky really fighting at the top of that list as well. We talked to him after the last day of the event, and he said that Kentucky is leading the charge in terms of schools that are reaching out to him contact wise, but he did admit that the NIL at Oregon is something that is very clearly keeping him intrigued. So keep that in mind as we, you know, talk through his recruitment in the coming weeks and months, that is at the top of his priority list on that end. But KJ is, you know, a guy that he is definitely perimeter oriented, Zach. He is, you know, a little bit of too inconsistent for my liking as a jump shooter, but the mechanics are clearly there. He, at the end of the day, wants to be Chris Bosh. He wants to be a stretch four at the college level. And then when his body fills out and, you know, his frame fills out, he wants to end up being a three. He said that he compares his game to Jason Tatum and, you know, guys like that. At that next level, that he Jason Tatum, Kevin Durant, and was it Brandon Ingram was the third name he brought up. I think those type of players, those long rangy kind of wings,
three of the best wings in the entire world, pretty much. Yeah,
that's what he wants to be at the end of the day. Do you buy it, Zach? I think that's the best way to put it. Do you think that he A is a wing? B, what do you think of his ranking as the number two overall prospect in that consensus?
I don't see him being a three unless he trims down his body a little. It's not that he's big or anything or too big, but he's just, I don't think he's mobile enough to be or quick enough to be an effective three at like the NBA level. Now the stretch four is where I really see him, you know, really hitting his stride. And he's a guy that I've been really high on over the last year, really. And I remember watching him at the Geico Nationals on that loaded Montverde team where they won it. And, you know, he came in and he was a bench guy as a five-star, which is crazy, but he was playing, you know, behind five seniors who were also five-stars who are all going to play D1 Power 5 basketball next year. So his role wasn't, you know, to come in and dominate. It was to come in and fill in the cracks. And he did a really good job of that. And a lot of, I feel like his ranking right now, he's two right now, or at least mm-hmm. on three, we have him as two. A lot of that ranking is built off the idea that once he gets on this Montverde team and he is the star, you know, he's the go-to guy and he can really put it all together. And we kind of got a first taste of that with the team Durant, because he's clearly the best player on that team, or the highest rated player at least. And his impact was, you know, I think you mentioned inconsistency was part of it. He's just sometimes he wasn't really active going for rebounds either, which I thought was weird for a guy that's 6'9" and as big as he is, that he should be wanting to go in there. That's where I think, you know, wanting to be a three, but maybe not being a three could potentially hurt him and just his mindset and how he approaches the game. But he's got a great, like I think you even mentioned as well, he's got a great feel. He's got a really smooth jump shot. He's good enough to, you know, get to his spots and things like that. But it's just a lot of it is, you know, consistently impacting a game at a high level. And I think, you know, it's probably fair to give him some time to adapt to that and maybe, you know, see how he progresses in that area. And maybe when we go to when we hopefully go to Louisville here in a couple of weeks to watch them again, see if he's been able to kind of grow into that role a little bit more. Because that's really just what it is he's just not aggressive enough getting to, you know, trying to get his shots. And his defense is decent, but, you know, nothing about him at that event really stood out about him. And I kind of came away a little less impressed than I had normally been when I was watching him. So I think he's a guy that I'm going to just continue to watch over the next coming months and see if he's really capable of taking over. And then we'll obviously watch him at Montverde and see if he can, you know, do that, take over, because he just hasn't done it yet.
Yeah. The idea of KJ Evans is way better than the actual KJ Evans. I mean, he shot 3 of 17. He shot 3 of 17 from three to open up the EYBL season. He averages 4.7 boards per game as their premier kind of four man right now, which just is not good enough. If you're
terrible. That's terrible.
He lives on the perimeter. He, you know, kind of jacks up jump shots and not consistent enough to be doing that. He doesn't know what position he is right now. Again, you said he has a great feel for the game. He's kind of one of those grab a rebound and go type guys, you know, comfortable with the ball in his hands. You see the flashes and you see the potential, and that makes you go, ah, that right there is why he's ranked so highly. But that is 2, 3, 4 times a game, as opposed to, you know, 20 possessions, 30 possessions. It's like that you can't rank a guy that high and keep him there on the idea of him being good one day. At some point, you got to kind of call a spade and say he's just not producing the way he needs to right now. This was a very important grassroots season for him, very important summer to show who he is and what he is. You know, I think the idea of him is fantastic. I think he could be a star down the road. He has the physical makeup and the tools to do that, but the production just leaves so much to be desired that I really struggle behind the idea of him being even, you know, in the top five. I think he's easily closer to top 10, maybe even push him down into the 15-ish range. It's a very weak class in general. So you kind of got to take a shot on a guy like that who you hope is good one day. But until that day comes, I just would not be comfortable putting him, you know, where he is right now, number two, especially. I mean, that's just clearly off, you know, just a little bit. So
I do think that the potential is, like, I genuinely do think that he still has the chance to be, you know, like, I don't know necessarily an all-star level player, but he's a tool guy. Like, he's got all the tools. He's 6'9", he can dribble, he can shoot. So that's exactly what NBA teams are looking for right now. So I think he has, like, a clear path to get there, but like we've just repeated 100 times, it's all about putting it all together, and he hasn't done it yet.
Robert Dillingham is a very interesting
one.
A very interesting player. We were talking about how DJ's kind of filled out, listed at that kind of 6'2", 165 pounds. Somebody who has not filled out. Robert Dillingham, 6'1", a buck 60, maybe. I think that he's probably closer to 150. There is nothing to that kid. But
bucket getter.
Professional bucket getter. He is slithery. He is as fun and entertaining of a player to watch in that class as you will find. He is nothing but entertainment from the minute the opening tip happens to the final buzzer. And the production's showing. He went five of nine from three this past event that we saw him. 62.5% from two throughout the whole EYBL, averaging 3.5 assists on just 1.8 turnovers per game, which for how kind of dazzling he is and kind of dancy he is, 1.8 assists per game ain't that bad. Like, I mean, there's for a guy
turnovers
like that,
is really what impresses me, that it's only 1.8 turnovers for a guy.
You expect him to be a 4 or 5 turnover type guy per game, but he's pretty careful with the ball. He's pretty safe, and he might, you know, make John Calipari have an aneurysm watching him play every once in a while, because he is shot selection is errant. He makes some weird decisions at times, and just a very enthusiastic, all over the place basketball player that he's a treat to watch. I really, really enjoy watching him play. How will that translate to the next level at a place like Kentucky? Will he be? I think he'd firmly be able to embrace that spotlight. I mean, it's kind of who he's been his whole, his whole high school career. But just the physical aspect of things, his size, there are some concerns there. He, you know, finished through contact fairly well this past weekend in particular, and that's never been a real issue for him. But I don't know. He's a very polarizing player, for better or for worse. Rob Dillingham is one of one.
Yeah. He is very microwavy.
Yeah.
It's, you know, 5 straight possessions, he could get 4. He could go 4 out of 5 from deep. And the next 5 possessions, he's going to shoot 3 air balls. Like, it's very much a, you know, pick your poison type, or not pick your poison, I guess, but selective scoring with him. Type deal. So, and the 1.8 turnovers, really, like, that was something I remember when we were looking at stats when we first got back, or one of the things I noticed was that number just seemed low because of how often he pushes the ball and tries to, you know, not necessarily force the issue, but he does take some bad shots and things. So I guess part of, you know, the low turnovers is he's just not really passing the ball. So maybe he doesn't have the opportunity to turn the ball over. But I remember the game I watched specifically was the game where he went 5 for 9 for 3 or whatever it was. And I think he hit three of them in a row. And it was like just maybe in 3 and 4 possessions or something. I was like, oh my God, like, you could see the vision with this kid, because he can shoot and score from anywhere, which is, you know, he's not that big, but he can still get into the paint and he's going to find a way to get a shot off. Not in the same way that DJ does, where it's kind of like wiggly and tries to like shift everyone. Like he's just going to rise up and just try and chuck the ball up somehow, some way. And a lot of times it goes in. So like you said, 62% on twos is really good. So he's actually moderately efficient. I think his 3-point percentage wasn't that great throughout the entire weekend. I think I only saw his one good 3-point shooting game, but you have that option of like, well, this kid can go off and, you know, he can pop off for 30 points, but you know, is that something, like you said, Cal can have an aneurysm. He's going to make half the fan base have an aneurysm, you know, if he shoots two straight threes on back-to-back possessions and he, you know, bricks the first one and then barely hits the rim on the second. So, and I can see those sort of situations happening. That's why I think he's probably better fitted at a place like NC State, which he, you know, obviously left. So I don't know how much I would like him on Calipari's team, because I do think he would drive a lot of people crazy, but you're going to have situations where the kid will pop off for 20 points and probably win a couple games just by himself because he can score at ways that others can't. And defense, yeah. I'm not really sure he has much there either. So that would be an issue for Cal.
But I will say, John Calipari was front and center every one of his games and has been from the first live period on. So there's clear interest. Cal likes him quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they are complementary pieces. Everybody I've talked to about DJ and Robert Dillingham about potentially playing together, they're just two ball dominant guards, flashy type styles of play. One is a safer bet. Indeed, DJ is the, you know, safety net player. Robert Dillingham is the kind of Malik Monk type guy, you know, a guy that could go for 49 points in any given night, or could go, 8 points on 4 of 20 shooting. You know, just kind of one of those in between. You never know what you're going to get with Robert Dillingham. So I understand there's a clear, and beyond just the politics and stuff of the DJ Wagner recruitment and, you know, the family ties and all that stuff. Just in terms of the two players, DJ feels infinitely more like a John Calipari point guard than Robert Dillingham. Right. Although I would just love to see how in the hell John Calipari would coach Robert Dillingham. It just feels like two complete personality clashing individuals that, in terms of playing style and safe, kind of safe bet type guys, it just feels very anti Calipari, but it almost adds intrigue to the whole thing where you go, why is Cal so interested in a guy like that? If he knows that he's just such a personality difference, but Cal's interested. He's been there every game. So what do I know?
And I mean, maybe I'm misrepresenting how it, kind of all unfolded with Derrick Rose's high school career. But I mean, I wouldn't say those two guys are too far off in terms of, their sporadic scoring capabilities. And obviously Derrick Rose wasn't as good as a 3-point shooter as Dillingham is, but Derrick Rose was not a guy that I don't think many people would. Well, I guess he had the John Wall thing. So I don't know what I'm saying here, but I'm trying to, reason why Calipari would go after a guy like that. Cause honestly, I don't think there's much of a precedent for him for going after a guy like him. Derrick Rose is maybe the closest guy I could think of.
Yeah. Yeah. The production's there. I mean, he as much as you'd think that he would raise Cal's blood pressure, he continues to consistently get buckets and play, take care of the ball. His shot selection might not be the prettiest at times, but he doesn't turn the ball over. And he gets buckets. So, yep. As much as you might not like his style of play or the way he plays, or it might make you uncomfortable, Luke continues to get buckets and do things that way. So, I there's clearly a reason that Cal likes him. Let's keep moving down this list. Ron Holland, who just put out a top 8 list, the only school on his list to not extend an offer for reasons who the hell knows. John Calipari is in Kentucky, is included in that top 8. Very interesting player in terms of pro potential. I think Ron Holland is clearly the best in the class in that wing forward group. He's physically all there, 6'8", 6'9", 210-ish pounds. Clearly has a body to work with in college and definitely moving forward in the NBA. you know, he was played some pretty inconsistent basketball to start the EYBL season. He's averaging 11.3 points, 6.3 rebounds, and 2.1 assists per game. Not living up to that kind of number one, you know, number two, number three billing that, you know, some of these other services are starting to jump him up. I think On Three actually jumped him, moving him all the way up to number three behind G. Jackson. So I think that was kind of a potential move, hoping that he was going to turn that, you know, kind of potential into production. He hasn't quite done that yet. Again, you get flashes, more consistent flashes than you get out of KJ Evans. Pretty consistently every game you'll get a stretch of four or five possessions with Ron Holland where you go, okay, that kid's a pro. Like, that kid's a clear pro, finishing through contact. Very strong, athletic, knocking down jump shots, you know, kind of a grab and go, grab a rebound, bring it up the, you know, coast to coast type threat. Really impressive in that regard. He's known, like, you look up his stats and you look up, you know, scouting reports and all that stuff. Everybody talks about his motor. Like, he has a second to none motor, the best motor in the class. I thought that was kind of one of his biggest weak spots just this past weekend. I don't know what it was about this weekend, but that was clearly not the case. That, you know, kind of took some plays off and just wasn't an initiator as much as you'd kind of hope for him to be and what he can be. And again, he dealt with some injury issues and, you know, had some leg problems, and you could just tell he just was not comfortable in that setting that weekend in particular. But there's a lot to like about Ron Holland, but I definitely need more viewings out of him before I kind of go all aboard the, you know, number two player, potentially number one player in the class train. Still offer worthy, clearly offer worthy. I think that he, I still don't understand what the delay is on Kentucky's end to extend that offer, but I definitely think that he's worthy. He's very interested in Kentucky. He told me that he was wanting to schedule a visit whenever Kentucky wanted to, you know, kind of take that next step with him.
Whenever. It could be today. That would take a flight today to Lexington if they said to.
Yeah, I mean, that he specifically went out of his way to say, I love Cal. I love Kentucky. I want to go there. But, you know, and you hear some stuff, you hear rumblings that there might be, you know, interest in money and want, you know, he might go pro. There's some talk about that. And there was some talk about it being a judgment call on Jay Lucas's end, that he kind of saw the handout maybe and said, you know, that's not something that we want to vibe with. But, you know, I don't know. They were still sitting there courtside watching every single game, and he made his final eight list and said that Chen Coleman has taken over his recruitment, is talking to him almost every day now. So clearly there's something. It's one of those things that I said on the show in the past. It's one of those, you either like this kid or you don't. If you like him, it's way too late for an offer at this point. You needed to offer 3-4 months ago if you were really serious about this kid. This whole kind of play wait and see game right now with a kid that's, you know, could potentially commit in just a couple months makes no sense to me. It's one of those, if you're going to make that judgment call that he has a handout and he has, you know, either he's going to go straight to the pros or he's looking for the biggest offer from, you know, in terms of cash, whatever. If that's the case, then you cut ties and say, sorry, this isn't a fit, you know, move on. But they made his final eight and they continue to ramp up contact. So it's one of those things like, are you really interested in this kid? Or are you not? If so, we got to make a move either way. You can't stay in this middle ground, kind of keeping the situation warm, all that stuff, because then you have no chance of getting him regardless. And if that's the case, all these recruiting efforts are pointless. So it kind of frustrating recruitment. He's probably the most frustrating recruitment out of all of them, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure there's got to be something going on behind the scenes, because just on the surface, it makes very little sense at all why Kentucky would go through this whole circus act pretty much to, you know, not offer this kid, even though he clearly, very clearly wants to at least go to Kentucky and check it out. And I'm sure the kid, he also sounds like he wants a visit or an offer, like, as much as he can. So, but I think when we watched him, he got injured in maybe the second or third game where he kind of landed awkwardly on his leg. But even before that, when we saw him, when we got to play, like you were saying, some of the effort or his motor wasn't, you know, wasn't go, 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 like I guess maybe we were expecting. He's incredible. He's really aggressive when he gets the ball and is like going downhill and stuff. The problem is I just felt like he didn't really want to get the ball all that often whenever he did. But like the guy is the most physically imposing you know, play, that's the biggest difference between him and KJ is Ron Holland is already built. Like he's ready for the NBA and that guy could actually play the three if he wanted to, because he's lean enough that he can kind of shift his way around and beat other threes. Unlike the way I don't think KJ could. So, and Ron Holland could even play the four too, because he's got a decent, I think we saw him knock down a couple outside jumpers. His shot is really good. I think he was actually really good from the free throw line too. I might've been wrong about that, but it was really just the lack of, you know, another consistency type of thing where you just, he was, I think they had another couple, they had another four star on their team. Was that the KJ Lewis, your boy? Was he on that team too?
Yes. I love KJ Lewis. Arizona.
So he's got like some complimentary pieces, but he, you know, he looked like he was kind of deferring to them a little bit more. And, you know, KJ is not really a scoring guy either. So like you said too, he's a guy that I want to see a little bit more. Because I do, you know, I'll chalk some of it up to that injury that kind of maybe it was an issue before he came in and just kind of it got aggravated at that one point. Maybe that's why some of those, you know, the overall motor wasn't what we were expecting. But he's a guy I'm not super high on. I wasn't super high on him coming in to watch him, but we'll see kind of where he goes. And honestly, I just want to, like, if you're Kentucky, there's no point in not just bringing him to campus at this point. I don't understand why you wouldn't just give him to campus an offer. I don't understand, or don't, or just stop talking to him at all. Yeah. So I don't understand it. It's literally makes zero. Like, there's got to be something else going on that's making all this weird. And it seems like, you know, the Jay Lucas thing didn't matter too much apparently, because I guarantee Jay was his lead recruiter, and I think he even told us that. So that was, it's just all interesting to see how this is all kind of unfolding, because it's clear that Kentucky is not that interested. They're interested, but not that interested.
Yeah. And he even said that I said, are you planning a visit to Kentucky? And he said, yeah, I'm planning on visiting in, I think, July, he said, or June or July. It might have been June. He said, yeah, I'm planning on visiting in June. Well, if they want me to visit, of course. And it's like what are we doing? It's like, what are we doing? So very frustrating case, very interested to see how he plays. You know, he's saying all the right things, saying, you know, I just want to earn an offer from Calipari. I want them, you know, I don't want to just get one for the sake of getting one. I want to earn one, but I don't care what he says publicly. Playing that long game, let's bring him in to extend an offer and, you know, kind of showcase him and you know, play that. I just don't think that's a winning situation for him, and I don't think that's a winning play. If you want to get him, you got to offer him now and then bring him in and then keep showing why he's a priority in the class, because right now he does not feel like he's a priority in the class. Arkansas has already established a very firm lead alongside UCLA. Other schools are kind of, you can make up ground when you're Kentucky later than other schools, but it's not at the point anymore where you can come in at the 11th hour, extend an offer and expect to be the number one school on his list anymore. That's just not how kids view this program at this point. Like, that's just the fact of the matter. They value these long-term relationships and trust and, you know, the coaches that saw them earlier than everybody else and took a chance on them before everybody else did, they think that they can get to the pros wherever school they go to. They don't care if they go to Arkansas. They don't care if they go to Washington. It doesn't matter. They think they can go to the pros at any school. It's easier to go at a place like Kentucky, but the difference isn't that substantial in their eyes right now. And I think Ron Holland fits that billing as well. Matas,
to be fair, he still has Kentucky in his top eight. So
no, and that's what I'm saying.
A little bit
that you can make up ground, but even with an offer, I still don't think Kentucky jumps up to number one in his recruitment. There's still a ton of work to be done, even if they do extend an offer. I just think that, you know, there are some times that Cal thinks he has a magic wand that as soon as he extends an offer, UK is now number one on this kid's list. And I just don't think that's the case for a guy like Ron Holland. I think that it would make them top three. I think UK might be top three as is, just because he likes UK so much. But the long work that Arkansas and UCLA have put in this recruitment, You know, just you go back 2-3 months, Ron Holland was saying in interviews that, John Calipari calls my parents and I haven't heard much from them, but we'll see how it goes. And then the very next quote was about Arkansas. And he says, oh yeah, Eric Musselman calls me almost every single day. We have a great relationship. Our relationship's growing and couldn't be better. And, you know, was praising the level of contact. And then I asked, what's going to be the deciding factor with you and your recruitment? And it was like, family relationship, the trust factor, where I think that I'm going to a family atmosphere, things like that. And it's like, okay, well, clearly he sees something from some schools that he's not feeling, because every quote that he says about Kentucky, it's always like, well, yeah, I like them, but do they like me? I really don't even know. So it's, again, very frustrating. If you like them, offer them. If you don't, cut ties. It's really not that complicated, I don't think. Matas Buzelis. Ron Holland might not be your favorite player, but I can't say about Matas. I think that might be your favorite. So let's go on your little soapbox. Why do you like Matas so much?
I just think he has the NBA potential that you're looking for in a 6'9" point guard who can play on the wing. He's got a terrific jump shot. He's really long. Great passer, very underrated passer as well. Can flick left-handed passes, the entire length of the court. And he's a right-hander too. So the kid, he's got a lot of tools on offense. Not good at rebounding. The defense will need work, but it's everything that he already brings on offense that makes him such a tantalizing prospect, if you will. And he's a guy that I think can immediately step in and be, a immediate contributor, and a guy that you can probably build your entire team around or your roster around, but you can centralize him as kind of like, all right, he's going to be the guy that has the ball in his hands and everybody else will feed off of him. Kind of, go the European to European, Luka Doncic type feel there. Obviously not the same player. Luka's much, much bigger, and that gives him a bigger advantage just in terms of scoring and defense and everything. But Matas can fill out. He's already, he's got big, broad shoulders, so he's going to be able to fill out as well. But he's pretty quick right now. He's good in transition as well. When he's got his head up, the kid is really, really tough to stop. Like I said, the rebounding will, do you want a 6'9" point guard rebounding? Who really knows? Or if it even matters really that much. But the defense will be something that he'll have to improve on, or else he can get picked on in that area. But I really, really like him as a immediate contributor at the college level, like a guy that can put up 15 a game pretty easily.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to like about him. I think he's a little soft right now. I think, his defense is a major work in progress. But offensively, he's so gifted. He's a playmaker. He's smooth and comfortable with the ball in his hands. You get these 6'10 point guards all the time, and are they really point guards, or are they wings that are comfortable dribbling, bringing the ball up the floor? Jason Tatum's of the world. Jason Tatum's not a point guard, but every other possession brings the ball up the floor for the Celtics. So it's kind of one of those, what are they really? He's a dude that could potentially be that kind of guy. And there's a lot of talk about Florida State, and you look at the way Leonard Hamilton was able to use Scotty Barnes, that kind of versatile wing, but brought the ball up the floor and really kind of facilitated and initiated. That's who Matas is. Like, that's the kind of guy that he is. And that's what he's going to be at the college level. And that's why I think that there's so much talk with Florida State as kind of the firm leader in his recruitment right now. It's just a fit. Like, it's a great fit. I do think Kentucky is kind of right there. They really like him. I was actually talking to somebody around the program about Matas, and there was just kind of this mindset when UK was going after Leonard Miller. I kind of said something in passing, like, Leonard Miller is the guy that, people think Matas is. And they were kind of like, whoa, 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 whoa. Leonard Miller is 19, 20 years old. Matas is like 17, super young for his age, growing, thin. They're like, there's a 2-year difference between the two. Of course, Leonard Miller is a little bit better at this current. I mean, he's a freaking first round draft pick right now. So like, when you understand both situations, there's a lot to like about Matos because he's so young, because he hasn't filled out yet, because he's already as advanced skill-wise as he is. Yes, he needs to fill out. Yes, he needs to get more physical. He is soft right now. He can't play defense. Like, there's a lot to not like about Matos, but there's way more to like. And I think that's where why he's, you know, number 11 right now in that consensus, growing, you know, kind of firmly solidifying himself as that firm five-star in the class. A lot to like about Matos, and I definitely think that he is an instant impact guy in college. A lot to work on, but plenty more to like about his game.
Yeah, his frame, I think that's something that will just, you know, it'll improve over time, as, you know, as it typically does with guys like him. And the good thing about him is he already is 6'10". And even if he's a bad defender now, when you're 6'10", and you're quick, it can be tough to be a bad defender. Like, he's going to be, I think eventually he will even out as a solid defender, which really, when you're that gifted on offense as he is, because for him, it's the positives far, far, far outweigh, you know, the fact that he's not that great on defense right now, and the fact that he weighs 180 pounds at 6'10" or whatever it is. So just the potential he has on offense is modern. It's, you know, it's the new era type where like you were kind of saying, like, is he a Jason Tate, like a quasi point forward type? I think the guy's a point guard straight up. Like, I think he will play point guard in college. I think he plays point guard the next level. Like, don't even stick him on the wing. You give that guy the ball and you let him run your offense type guy. So I don't know if I don't know if that's something that Cal would want to do, have a 6'10 guy running his offense. He's done it with 6'5 guys, so I don't see why not, you know, go even taller and just get a guy that's going to pretty much just break down defenses because he's, you know, so tall, he can shoot and he can pass that well.
I do think that he is better sharing the ball with DJ Wagner than Robert Dillingham is. I think just because he is 6'10", because he does have that off-ball shooting, I think that's probably a better fit alongside DJ Wagner. DJ is such a great facilitator. Both of them can facilitate the hell out of the ball. So I think that might be a better fit if Kentucky's able to, you know, make that push. But definitely interesting, just kind of long-term trajectory of what Matos is going to be. Guys that know basketball infinitely more than I do that have been watching these kids play since they were freaking 6 years old, they swear by Matos and say that he is going to be next. Trust the process with him. Take that ride, take that roller coaster journey with him, because it's going to result in a thrilling ride at the end of the day. So I definitely am all aboard the Matos hype train. We've talked a lot about, you know, high potential guys and kind of guys that are more potential than production right now. Mostly, Justin Edwards does not fit that billing. Justin is definitely a high floor guy, a guy that has really kind of solidified himself as a firm production guy at this level, especially. He won defensive MVP honors at the Session 2 in Indianapolis, averaged 18.8 points, 4.5 rebounds, 3.0 steals, and 1.8 blocks per game. Second team all event. He's a do-it-all on both ends of the floor, 6'7", 180, 190-ish pounds right now. I love his two-way ability. I think he's a dog defensively. Love his length, gets out in the passing lanes very well, athletic, can score in transition. Jump shot is definitely more consistent, and he's growing much more confident in that area. Just kind of that long lefty, versatile lefty that everybody loves in this class. I think he has kind of firmly cemented himself as a top five player in this class, just because it's a weak class in general, and he has the production right now to match it. Like, he is a all about production at this level against the best talent and competition in high school basketball. So I think Tennessee is the pretty solid leader right now. And I think Kentucky and Auburn are kind of duking it out for number two and number three for him. I think there's time. I think Kentucky needs to ramp up its recruiting efforts. I think they might have gotten a little lackadaisical thinking they had that one locked up, and he is not locked up. So I think that's one that if Kentucky really wants him to kind of be their go-to wing guy at that position, I think they need to kind of upscale things and really show that he is their top priority in the class at the, on that wing spot. But I think, you know, all the hype has been Ron Holland and, you know, some other guys, high potential guys on the wing. But just in terms of who they are right now, I mean, I just I'd be hard pressed to find a guy that I like more than Justin Edwards at that wing position.
Yeah, his defense, I think, is really what separates him. I think he's probably the best wing defender in this class. I don't think there's maybe much competition, but that kid is really, really – I think there's definitely more potential with his defense than his offense. But I think his offense is good and it's growing. I think he's really developed that jump shot, like you said, because I think it was last summer the kid couldn't really shoot anything at all, and now he's pretty efficient. Like, I don't know what his numbers were, but I know he was shooting pretty well. Or he has so far with the EYBL. So consistency was his thing. Like, you know, he was steady with his production. His team final squad isn't the greatest.
Awful.
Yeah. So they lost all their best players, you know, with Duran and whoever else they had. I mean, that squad was loaded for a little bit. So him kind of being the go-to guy was impressive to see because he handled it rather well. But the defense is really, I think he has the Cal capability, or, you know, what Cal's looking for on that end. Like, that guy, like you said, he's a dog. He's not going to, you know, like, get on the floor and lick off food off the ground or anything. But that kid is good enough on defense that, you know, he would be probably Kentucky's best defender from day one if he stepped into that situation. But offense, you know, maybe let him grow a little bit more and we'll see if it's really what it is. But I was impressed. You know, I don't know where I would rank him or not. He's probably a top 10 guy. Like you said, right now we've got him at 13 on the consensus. So he's probably due a bump. And I think that jump shot coming along is really what's separating him from some of the other wings. And obviously the defense, like I said, that's really what makes him, you know, a pro potential type player, I think.
All right, coming down the home stretch, we got to wrap up here shortly. Aaron Bradshaw, a guy that I will admit I have not been very high on. I was not super impressed with him his junior year. And it was kind of weird because every time I got to see him in live settings or I watched film on him, I just came away super unimpressed. I thought he was kind of clunky, didn't run the floor very well, just a, you know, 7'1", 220-ish pound guy that I just didn't think he moved well. I didn't think he scored well, great defensively, but just, you know, I just think he was the best of an awful center class in that 23 group. So, you know, do you recruit him just for the sake of DJ Wagner because they're teammates? Do you recruit him because he's truly a top 20 player in the class and you know, somebody that you can anchor the front court? I just wasn't sold on him. I just will admit that I was not. I thought he was tremendous in Indianapolis. I thought he ran the floor extremely well, much more fluid. He's growing, consistent and confident with his post moves. His footwork is great. He's a guy that he was the ultimate prove me wrong type guy. I was not a fan at all going into that event, but up to 26 block shots through 8 EYBL games. It's 3.1 per game, shooting 66% from the field, 18 of 20 from the free throw line. I mean, look, he's getting there. I mean, and something that I think impressed me most out of everything, he was stepping out and knocking down jump shots from 16, 17 feet. That is a guy that shut me up. I was not all aboard the Aaron Bradshaw hype train. I was like, I don't know what I'm missing here. Aaron is good. He's a hell of a player. You take him whether DJ Wagner comes or not. He is a guy that can be the focal point of your, you know, I don't know if, you know, he might be a better complementary piece if you add a star at the four position or if he's your backup center with, you know, whoever the best big is in the portal, whatever, however you want to go about doing it. I don't know if I want him being the guy down low, but he's definitely a piece. He's definitely a rotation big that, you know, there's a ton to work with, especially defensively. I thought he was tremendous in that area. Thanks for proving me wrong, because that kid was a hell of a player in Indy.
Yeah, I was in the same boat with you at Hoop Hall. He really didn't impress us too much, even playing alongside DJ. And I was of the opinion at that time where it was like, you know, if it gets DJ, you know, bring him on board. And then, you know, we both had kind of the same revelation in Indy, where the guy, you know, if you want to consider Bay Fall a center, you can, but I think Aaron Bradshaw is the best center in this class, and it's really not that close at this point. He's, you know, I guess his competition isn't great in that regard, but that kid is the best. One of my favorite parts about his game was that number you said, 18 for 20 from the free throw line. Like, I remember even talking to him too. He said a couple different times that he's trying to shoot more jumpers and go outside. And like, that's a part of his game he's currently adding. So if he can, and clearly he has the motion, and if you're a good free throw shooter, you know, you've got the mechanics clearly. So it'll translate if he can get out there a little bit more. He was kind of showing it a little bit. But even in the game where DJ didn't play for his, you know, off court activities that he was doing, Aaron Bradshaw was still one of the better players on the floor. He gobbles up rebounds. He hits pretty much everything around the rim. He's not like giraffe-like, like a baby giraffe, if you will, for like normal 7-footers. Like he's been tall for a little bit, you can tell. So he knows how to move in his body. But he's a guy that I would absolutely take right now, no matter what happens. Like if that kid says he wants to commit today, I think you take him. He kind of has not nearly as athletic as a Damian Collins, but kind of the same similar skill set, just tack on 4 more inches. So that was his just overall, I don't know what happened from January to whenever we saw him, but it was a complete 180, and the kid is legitimately, you know, a guy that I think Kentucky should take, and I'm a big fan of his now.
Yeah, I mean, people I were talking to were swearing by him, saying, no, I don't know what you're seeing, because I was like, man, I think Ugonna Kingsley, who's, you know, was playing in the Adidas circuit, and, you know, these other guys that are kind of these up-and-coming players, I was like, man, you can take Aaron Bradshaw, you can take Isaiah Miranda, you know, some of these other guys that are just kind of the best of the worst in a very poor class in general bigs. I was like, man, there's got to be something else out there. And, you know, I was wrong. People were swearing by Aaron, saying, man, no, make sure, go watch him again and, you know, give him a chance and give him another chance. And he absolutely proved me wrong. He had an 8-block performance, in Indianapolis, which again, that's, you know, just absurd. And Kentucky's had some elite shot blockers, and he is certainly fitting that billing as well. So yeah, keep an eye on Aaron Bradshaw. Let's round out with this guy, Milan Momčilović. He is a team hero standout, currently unranked. Well, depending on who you're looking at, you know, kind of firmly 4-star status, kind of into the top 100 in some of the other recruiting sites. As skilled as they come among big Zach, he is a, you know, 6'8", 6'9"-ish, 190-ish pounds so far. Doesn't run very well, not laterally quick, but goodness gracious, this dude can score the piss out of the basketball. Just very, very skilled, can score at all three levels. Kind of got some like Dirk Nowitzki to him. He has this step back, kind of turnaround fadeaway jump shot, that 1-foot fadeaway jump shot that Dirk kind of patented and made his specialty for years. That's kind of his go-to specialty as well. You know, great 3-point shooter. You know, really just really fundamentally sound as a scorer on that end. And, you know, averaging 18.5 points per game in the EYBL circuit through 8 games. So a lot to like about him, not overly athletic, not quick, but the dude can out flat out score the basketball. I'm a big fan of his as well. If you're looking for, you know, it's unfair to call him Kyle Wilcher because he's a tall, unathletic white scorer. But at the same time, you know, think of that where, you know, he's going to be a little bit of a liability defensively, but there's a place on the floor for a guy like that. So I'm a fan of Milan's.
Yeah. His offense, if I have to make a weird comparison, would kind of gives me like Morris brother vibes. Marcus and Keith, just kind of how they get to their shots and really like kind of surprisingly good 3-point shooters, big guys already. And I think Milan will probably get even bigger. I don't think he's 190 is what we've got him listed at. I think he's probably a little bit bigger than that, but he's a guy I wasn't terribly impressed with, honestly. I think I caught a bad game when I watched him though. So he's a guy I'm going to keep a very close eye on when we get to Louisville in a few weeks to watch him again. But yeah, the scoring was definitely, you know, what stood out. Obviously, the guy, he can get off pretty much any shot. His team is terrible, I think, is part of maybe some of the issue with, you know, when you're watching this guy, because he's just playing with not even Tyler Hero's brother was playing. That guy was, I think he was hurt or something. His younger brother, Austin, I think is his name. So the team was just terrible. I don't know if they won any game. So, you know, eventually he's just taking bad shots and things like that. So he's a guy I want to see again. I think the offensive potential is there as a guy that can, you know, kind of score from all three areas of the floor as a forward. So he's definitely a guy that's going to have a lot more attention moving forward. And he's a guy that I'll be paying more attention to going forward as well.
Yeah. I will, you know, point out that he is playing for, Team Hero, which there is the Kentucky connection there. John Calipari was there watching. And the game that I saw Cal watching him play, he put up 26 points on Justin Edwards, who is seen as the best perimeter defender and, best wing defender in that 23 class. So, I mean, the dude's a bucket getter. That's just who he is. He's, not going to wow you athletically. He's not going to wow you in terms of quickness or speed or anything like that. But the dude can get buckets. So an impressive weekend at EYBL, although I will make it clear that it is a poor class overall in the 17U group, just across the board. It's just a really down year. 23 is not a great recruiting class in general. It's kind of one of those top heavy. You gotta hit the, hit your home runs. You got to hit on DJ Wagner. You got to get the best of the positions. If you're going, you got to get a guy like DJ Wagner. You got to get a Justin Edwards or a Matas or a Ron Holland. You got to hit the home runs on the great fits in this group. Because if you just kind of go best of the best or go for high potential guys, I mean, you could kind of get a island of misfit toys almost with just kind of how weird the class is in terms of some guys are kind of high floor guys but low ceiling. Some guys are, super low floor but extremely high ceiling guys. So it just kind of creates for a crapshoot in terms of what you're getting out of the class. But there's some talent to work with there, and Kentucky's clearly in solid position with a solid group of them. So we'll see how things go. But I
want to bring something up here. I don't know if you purposely skipped over him, but do we want to talk about JJ Taylor? Or is that a lost cause at this point?
I mean, more so for time purposes, I just don't think he's going to end up at Kentucky. I think UK watched maybe one game this past weekend or that weekend. He's a impressive scorer, great shooter for his size, thinks he's a point guard, but he's not a point guard. He kind of plateaued a little bit early for my liking. I think I liked him a lot more last summer than I do now. I don't think he's grown enough for my liking this year, but he is still technically a five-star wing with a Kentucky offer. So
the very first one from that junior class.
Yeah. So, it is what it is in that case.
I don't even think I paid much attention to him when we were up there either. He's not really a guy that's too much on our radar at this point.
Well, let's go on and get out of here. And we went a little long because we still have to add an Adidas segment to this as well. May have to split this into two different shows because I know it'll be overwhelming to get a freaking 2-hour show or hour and a half or whatever it would be. So, it was a lot of fun though, Zach. I had a good time breaking down these kids and we'll certainly do something similar whenever this Louisville weekend rolls. We'll try to do this every live period, every major EYBL, Adidas, whatever event we're at. We'll make sure we break down these kids as we typically do.
Yeah, we have hopefully some busy plans ahead over the next 2-3-ish months. So we've got a few different destinations in mind that we should hopefully be able to go scout a lot of these kids. And ideally we'll be able to scout a lot of them at the same time, as opposed to the Nike and the Adidas split. So plenty of content coming.
Absolutely. Well, with that, let's get out of here. Where can fans find your work?
Ooh, I love this part. They can find me, where? I guess just KentuckySportsRadio.com, or you can go to my Twitter hold on. What is it? It's Z Gagan KSR. Gagan is the triple G, Jack. You know that. GEOGHEGAN. That's my Twitter. I'm on the internet as well if you just type in my name.
Well, you can find me on Twitter as well, at Jack Pilgrim KSR. Reach out to me via email at jpilgrim@kentuckysportsradio.com. With that, we'll be back next time for the Jam Packed Sources Say podcast. We will see you then.